May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Mark Willis from the law firm of Q-Tech Rock, attorney registration number 31025. I represent Wells Fargo, the plaintiff below, and the appellant here. It would be easy to start these oral arguments with the obvious reason this court should reverse the trial court's order dismissing this case under Rule 12C. As set forth in the appellate briefing, when any of the material allegations in the complaint are denied by the answer, it's reversible error to grant judgment on the pleadings. That's exactly what happened here. If the court were just to take a cursory review of the complaint filed by Wells Fargo and the material allegations in support of its claims, and then take a review of the answer, seeing that Ms. Wheel denied those, this court should reverse on that ground alone.
If the foreclosure sale extinguished the lien of the deed of trust as a matter of law, then there was nothing improper about the adjudication on the motion for judgment on the pleadings, was there?
That would be correct, Your Honor, but the foreclosure sale absolutely did not extinguish.
No, I understand your position, but I just want to make sure that you agree that if it did, then we're done.
Well, I'm, with all due respect, I might disagree with that a little bit. In the context of a Rule 12C motion, if the plaintiff were to allege that it did not get extinguished by the sale and the other party denied that allegation, I would say that it's not proper, even if the court were to look at it and say, well, I'm going to determine as a matter of law at this point in time that it was extinguished because it's not a Rule 12C.
But we don't have to accept the party's allegations regarding the legal effect of something, do we? Don't we get to decide that?
Yes, Your Honor, but in with respect to ruling on a 12C motion, the allegations that are set forth in the complaint are be construed at, in favor of the party in the complaint. So, and in this case, and as it relates to the bigger question here is, and really what I'd like to focus on for the oral arguments today is the fact that the foreclosure sale absolutely did not extinguish Wells Fargo's senior deed of trust. Both the trial court's order and Ms. Wheel's answer brief fail to recognize two important things. One, the legal status of Wells Fargo's deed of trust at the time of the foreclosure sale, and more importantly, the nature of the title that passed to the foreclosure's investor after that sale. Under 3838501, the title that passes to a holder of a certificate of purchase is free and clear of all liens and encumbrances that are junior to the lien being foreclosed. So it's important to look at what the lien being foreclosed at. The lien being foreclosed here was the HOA's lien under COYA. Under COYA, the HOA has a assessment lien on the property for that is junior to a prior recorded security interest, with the exception of 6 months of assessments. That's the so-called super priority. If the super priority is paid in full, then the only lien that can be foreclosed is junior to that security interest. That's exactly what happened here. Prior to the foreclosure sale, the super lien, the 6 months assessment, $276, was paid in full. At that moment in time, the only lien that could be foreclosed was junior to our senior deed of trust.
So your position is that basically your deed of trust had essentially two statuses. One as a junior lien to the HOA with respect to what, 6 months worth of assessments, and otherwise a senior lien. And that is provided for by statute.
Let me answer.
That is not provided for by statute?
Yeah, the statute at issue is COYA. And it's written, because lawyers write things poorly, it's written a little bit poorly, but the way the statute reads is it says that a HOA has a lien prior to everything except a senior recorded deed of trust. And then underneath that, it says its lien is prior to even the senior deed of trust with the exception of 6 months. So the way that the courts have interpreted this, and I think we cited Quail Creek, is basically if you record a deed of trust, prior recorded deed of trust, like we did in 2005, we always have a senior lien. But there's a six-month window when a notice of assessment is filed that trumps ours. If you pay that off, then we just retain our senior status. So to get back to what you had asked, do we have two different statuses? No, we've always had a senior prior recorded deed of trust.
And yet you've been junior to the 6 months worth of assessments from an HOA.
You're only junior, Your Honor, after they file a notice of lien, when there has been a failure to pay those assessments, and it's only for 6 months.
Right.
And it's important, Your Honor, to go back and look at COIA. I mean, this is a COIA case. It is not a race notice statute case, not a bona fide purchase value case. It's a COIA case. COIA was not intended to give an HOA a mechanism to wipe out a senior deed of trust on the property for $276.
But didn't the first trial court's order do exactly what you just claimed it shouldn't have done, and you didn't appeal that order? So right or wrong, weren't you bound by that order? Even if the trial court did not properly apply Kiowa.
Your Honor, the trial court, we filed our complaint, they filed an answer, they filed a motion for judgment on the pleadings. The court granted that, and we appealed that.
No. I'm talking about the HOA foreclosure. There was a decree entered, just so happens it was the same trial judge, but an entirely separate litigation, and the court entered an order adjudicating that your lien was junior to the lien of the HOA. The court didn't make any distinction of the type Judge Daly is talking about. It just said you're junior, and you didn't appeal that. That became a final judgment. Aren't you bound by that?
No, Your Honor. Let me kind of, again, explain how COIA works in that decree of foreclosure. The HOA can foreclose at any time from a junior position. And this happens all the time in the lending world. Our firm, though we didn't handle the prior piece of this, we do this all the time. When an HOA goes in and starts these processes, they will routinely file an action and they get the decree of foreclosure that was obtained in the HOA foreclosure case. The lender comes in because it has its right under COIA to write that check, and then they do, and as soon as that check is written, that's all they need to do to protect their interests. We don't care about what happened at the HOA foreclosure. That decree of foreclosure, we don't need to appeal that. We don't need to set aside that sale. We're not here seeking to set aside the sale. That was all appropriate. What we are doing is we wanted to foreclose our interests that survived that sale in a Rule 120. We weren't able to do that, so we filed this action to judicially foreclose.
Do you have any legal authority that says what you just said, that at any time prior to the sale, the sheriff's sale, that you can come in and outside the procedures established by statute, you can just cut a deal and extinguish the super priority lien? Is there any case law or statute that says you can do that?
I think there are two. One is, I think, the language in COIA that talks about what the lien is being foreclosed. I also think, Your Honor, that 3838501 talks about what a person gets at a foreclosure sale. The decree of foreclosure isn't determinative of what someone gets at a foreclosure sale. 3838501 is, and it's whatever the nature of the lien being foreclosed.
Let me ask you, maybe 3838501 is, unless it's erroneously applied by the trial court. What happens when the trial court makes an error? You know, maybe they shouldn't have, maybe the trial court shouldn't have decided it that way, but doesn't somebody have to do something or contest the trial court's, or do you just ignore the trial court's error?
Well, again, the trial court did not commit an error in the HOA foreclosure action. The HOA was entitled to foreclose and from a junior position. So that case, we're not dealing with that case. That wasn't an error. But to get to your question.
Well, the trial court there, I think, did say that Wells Fargo had a junior lien. It didn't qualify it, didn't say junior lien, you know, to the extent of 6 months. It just said a junior lien.
It did so in the decree of foreclosure.
Right.
Before the lien priority stipulation was filed, which was before the foreclosure sale. And then the court entered an order going back and saying the decree of foreclosure that I entered does not apply to our lien. But I want to address one more point that I think addresses both what Judge Daly and Judge Berger is asking about, are there any authorities on it? There's a case that we cited, I think, on page 8 of our reply brief that basically says it voided a foreclosure sale where the party did not have title to the property. There was a decree of foreclosure that had been entered, and the court came back and said, look, you can't give away rights that you don't have, and so they voided that sale. That's similar to what we're saying here. The trial court never gave away our rights. We always retain our senior status in this property. So if the court looks at that issue, if it focuses on what is the status of the Wells Fargo deed of trust at the time of the foreclosure sale, and it focuses on what title passed to the foreclosure investors, which was subject to our lien, then all of the arguments in the answer brief, as well as the rationale for the trial court's order, is off. It misses the mark. It all focuses on what happens after the foreclosure sale. And for that reason, the trial court's order is fundamentally flawed.
How were the foreclosure purchasers, the bidders at the foreclosure
yes.
sale, how were they supposed to know about this private deal that you cut with the HOA?
Well, two things, Your Honor. Number one is the public's notice that goes out of these foreclosure sales has to stay in bold, whether it's the first lien being foreclosed. So these foreclosure investors are very familiar with this process. They're very familiar with this court. They've been in this court before. They would have gotten a notice that would have noticed that it may not be the first lien being foreclosed. And
isn't your position that, you know, regardless of the notice that went out, you know, they should have been on notice that your senior recorded deed of trust would still have priority with respect to $231,750 worth of lien, at least?
Yeah, I that's my position, because I think that's exactly how these people work and operate and what they know, because they deal in this. They bid $27,000 for this. They knew very well that they were buying a second lien position. They sold it for $200,000 and made a 600% profit. But that's why the onus is on Ms. Wheel and her title insurance company to spend the time to look and see what's in the records before buying it.
So it is you said it wasn't a Recording Act case, it was a Kiowa case, and I wasn't really following that. I mean, it is in part, but in part, doesn't it matter what people knew or should have known or actually did know or on inquiry notice of knowing?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that issue came up because the court decided this on this bona fide purchaser for value. As we've indicated in the briefing, that was erroneous and not part of the case. The race notice statute, this would be, if we were trying to claim some interest in this property other than on a deed that was recorded after the foreclosure sale, our deed predated the foreclosure action, the less pendants, and the foreclosure sale. It was in 2005.
So your position is not that it should be, the case should be remanded for further proceedings, but the case should be remanded with directions to enter judgment for your client?
Well, we didn't have time, Your Honor, to put together, the case just started. So we will be filing, if the court remands, a motion for summary judgment. We think this is a clear issue of law. Unfortunately, we were stopped in our tracks with this premature judgment on the pleadings, but that is our intent.
Can you explain to me, you know, if we got this foreclosure procedure, we've got this foreclosure process started, and then we cut a deal ahead of time, what was the necessity of continuing the foreclosure sale? Couldn't someone have stepped forward and say, oh, it's not necessary anymore, let's abandon it, cancel it, something to it?
No, because, Your Honor, it would take away the HOA's right to foreclose their second position lien. They have a borrower in that property that is not paying assessments.
If someone has paid off ahead of time and satisfied that lien, why would there be a need to go forward?
Good question, Your Honor. We only satisfied the super priority, the 6 months.
Right.
So the bid amount, I think, was around $27,000 that was due and owing from the borrower on the property. So the HOA...
To the HOA?
Yeah, exactly right. The HOA has an assessment that builds up over time, so we pay off the super priority, they go in and get title to the property. I see my time is about up, so I would just ask the court to reverse the trial court's decision, deny the motion for judgment on pleadings, and allow us to proceed with our three claims for relief. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, counsel.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Billy Jones from Moy White. I'm here today representing the appellee. Ms. Weil is here with me today. I guess let me start with the legal issue here with respect to motion for judgment on the pleadings. I think you were exactly right earlier where you said, look, if you find as a matter of law based on the undisputed trail of documents that both preceded the sale and came after the sale, there was ample authority for the trial court to enter the order that it did on the motion for judgment on the pleadings. In particular, let me direct your attention to what occurred before the sale, because it is important. You know, with respect to the order and decree for judicial foreclosure, which the courts, you all have addressed earlier with opposing counsel, there were specific findings there that were binding on Greenpoint Mortgage, who's the predecessor to Wells Fargo, who's here today. And those included the fact that there was a finding in this order, which was granted prior to giving it to the sheriff. Sheriff doesn't get to sell these properties willy-nilly. He needs an order which authorizes the sale. And that order found that, in fact, the HOA's lien was senior and Greenpoint's mortgage was junior. And, in fact, the order instructed the sheriff to engage in the sale pursuant to this order and talked about the redemption rights that would be accorded to defendants such as Greenpoint that had junior interest in the property. In fact, there's a reference there saying that pursuant to 38-38-501, title to the subject real property will be free and clear of any interest or claims of said defendants, which includes Greenpoint. So it was crystal clear, and I would also raise that this was an order pursuant to CRCP 105, which requires and is there to obtain a complete adjudication of interest in property, whatever those interests may be.
Are you arguing that it was that the HOA lien was still prior, even though it had been paid off?
Yes, Your Honor, I am, and here's why. The payment that was made, I believe, sorry, it may have been 3 or 4 days before the line. There was an allegation the payment was made. The stipulation that was filed the day prior to the actual sale by the sheriff. If you look at the certificate of purchase that was issued by the sheriff, it specifically references that the sale was performed and title was given to the purchasers pursuant to that certain order and decree for judicial foreclosure dated December 14th, 2010. So in response to your question, to the extent they wanted to have a payoff and establish a lien priority that was different from the court's order establishing that they were junior, writing a check is not enough to change a court order. Filing a stipulation between the parties is not sufficient to change a court order. Allowing the sale to go on when, as a practical matter, a phone call could have bumped the sale a week, which is how most municipalities around here do it. Allowing the sale to be conducted, the property to be sold pursuant to that order, which holds specifically that Greenpoint's mortgage is junior, then getting the stipulation after the sale had occurred that the ship has sailed for purposes of their rights. Their rights were adjudicated to be junior pursuant to court order. The sheriff was ordered to sell it pursuant to that order, and the sheriff did it. And I don't think an action taken outside of court, the writing a check or wiring money, however the payment was made on the super priority amount, is sufficient to change that order. And I don't think that filing a stipulation with the court the day before sale is sufficient to change that court's order.
Do you have any legal authority that supports what you just said? I understand the argument, but I haven't seen any statutory authority, case law authority, that says what you just said.
Your Honor, that is a corner of the law, like many things that are, frankly, in the practice of civil litigation known and done all the time, where I have not identified anything. There are civil rules. For example, I can think of the rules related to continuances in various courts, which state that the parties can't stipulate in the face of a scheduling order or other court orders. But no, I do not have specific authority that states whether one can, by, for example, making a payment, somehow gut a prior order of court.
So then the corollary question I have is, why doesn't it matter whether or not your client or the foreclosure purchasers had either actual or inquiry notice that this lien, the super priority lien, is no longer there? Why doesn't that make a difference?
Two reasons. The first reason is the chain in the documents that preceded and came after the sale, showing that the sale was performed pursuant to that order, which it adjudicated then to be junior. The second reason is with regard to the notice.
You're talking about your wild deed issue?
I'm getting to that. What I'm talking about originally, my first point, was the what we've been discussing, which is the order of judicial foreclosure, which establishes that priority. The fact that the sale was conducted under that order and the confirmation that the sale was made pursuant to that order in the certificate of purchase. That's the first reason why knowledge is immaterial. The second reason that notice is immaterial, to be more precise, the second reason has to do with the statutes referenced in the brief that talk about, and I talked about this in my arguments, what the other side is attempting to do is have us treat unrecorded documents as if they were recorded. And that's important because of the language in the applicable statute, which is 3835-109, which talks about unrecorded documents are binding only as to the parties thereto and are not considered to be notice.
But that only applies to constructive notice, doesn't it? I mean, I'm talking about actual notice. In other words, no one knows in this record whether your client had or didn't have actual notice that a deal was cut whereby the super priority lien was paid off. We don't know that. We don't know whether or not from this record your client was on inquiry notice of that fact. Doesn't that matter?
It would not matter because of the wild deal arguments, which I think would be a third argument in that regard. When the purchases out of foreclosure were two LLCs, my client purchased from them at full value in August, so let's call it 3 to 4 months following the foreclosure sale. The only recorded document that makes any reference to this was the actual court's order issued on May 3rd after the sale, which was then subsequently recorded at the end of June. Any time you're talking about the grantor-grantee index and talk about records to real property, there's an issue of constructive notice. But deeds that are just recorded, which don't relate to the particular grantor or grantee, don't appear in the chain of title. They're not part of the chain of title. They don't provide that type of notice. That's the point of having race notice and the point of having a grantor-grantee system. So in that regard, I think there's nothing in the record, and there's no allegation in the complaint that there was any knowledge by my client who came much further in this process. And there's
would
certainly
that be
nothing
required, recorded. Would that be required to be alleged under notice pleading?
I believe so. To the extent they want to, the two reasons. Number one, I think it's necessary to the extent you're going to make the argument that my client is bound in opposition to statute and the chain of court orders has preceded this, with knowledge of something outside of that, I think it is necessary to plead that.
All right, let's assume that they made such an allegation without regard to whether they were required to. Let's say the complaint specifically said that your client had actual notice of the resurrection, if you want to call it that, of Wells Fargo's lien. Under that record, would the judgment below be erroneous?
It would not, and here's why. Because the chain of documents starting with the order of foreclosure and into the certificate of purchase establishes the extinguishment of their lien, whatever knowledge was gained after the fact was of a claim and to the property which had been extinguished.
What if they said that the foreclosure investors had notice, actual or inquiry notice? In that instance, would you have to remand?
If I may parrot that back to you to make sure I understand your question, you're inquiring as to whether or not the record, there was an allegation or something in the record showing that those LLCs.
You would just said, no, you don't need to do anything to the judgment because I took title from somebody else. Well, what if somebody else hadn't appropriately obtained title or had at least obtained the title with some type of notice?
I think the answer is the same. And the answer is the same because, again, the chain of what happened both preceding and coming out of this foreclosure established that the junior lien of Greenpoint, now Wells Fargo, was extinguished.
But,
and the knowledge but, you would have had it, was that it...
But what if it wasn't? I mean, I understand. I mean, you have an easy case. If the court rules that there was a total extinguishment of the lien by virtue of the completion of the sheriff's sale, you win.
Yes.
I mean, that's the easy case. But suppose we don't agree with that. Suppose we say, well, there can be circumstances under which that lien could be resurrected. Now, do you admit that your client, the possibility that your client had either actual or inquiry notice is important to the extent that we have to reverse the trial court's judgment for further proceedings?
I don't believe so for two reasons. The first reason would relate to the language of 3835.109 and its distinction between notice with regard to recorded and unrecorded documents and the undisputed record in this case that you would compare it to. I think the second reason is what led the trial court to the language relating to bona fide purchaser for value that was included in the record below and in the order of the trial court. Because I think that, again, as I said in my brief, there's separate independent grounds here. I think that leads you to that issue, bona fide purchaser value, where notice is an issue. And I think in a case like this with the record that you have, which shows, which fails to show any notice,
this record fails to show just about anything because of the procedural posture that the judge decided the case on. There is no record.
Well, there is a record of the chain from the orders to the foreclosure and the recorded documents that were referenced within. And, I mean, there is that. On the more developed factual record of who knew what, when, no, that, you know, the case was decided before we got into discovery, depositions, or any of that. So you're correct in that the record is sparse in that regard. But I think in this situation, with regard to both the foreclosure purchasers and my clients, that, you know, what is in the record with regard to notice and what they would have been notified of in the record would have been a sale conducted in accordance with a scenario where what Greenpoint, now Wells Fargo's mortgage, was junior and was extinguished. So I think that is the... that's the interesting part of this case from a legal perspective.
I think we agree with you on that.
I mean, it is. It's an interesting scenario. The dates are important. The language is important. I think that leads me to something I referenced in the brief that I wanted to discuss, and that's this. Again, it's a practical matter. There were innumerable opportunities for this situation to have been avoided at the time. And in particular, to have been avoided at the time with regard to the actions that Greenpoint and the HOA did or didn't take. I think it's important to note here, and it was referenced in the brief, Wells Fargo took the position that they had they didn't have to do anything. They just had to write the check, didn't have to file a stipulation, didn't have to record anything. Like, these are extraordinary steps. At a practical level, it's important to understand the way foreclosures work in Colorado is you get an order from the court, and then it's turned over to the sheriff or the public trustee. It's a separate section. The judges don't actively do foreclosures. Because of that, you know, from an equities perspective, and I think that's important in this record, there were innumerable opportunities for Wells Fargo, who was seeking, apparently, to preserve its position, to do any number of things.
Could Wells Fargo have appealed that order saying that its lien was junior? Could it have appealed the foreclosure decree?
I believe so, yes. They could have appealed the foreclosure decree. They could have written a check more than a few days before the foreclosure proceeding. They could have
asking about could they have appealed the foreclosure decree.
Yes. I mean, it's a final, I think for purposes of appeal, it's a final order which would be sufficient for them to appeal it to the extent they felt it inaccurately reflected their position. I don't think it ultimately did.
If it was a final order, what jurisdiction did the court have to enter that stipulation? That seems to modify the rights set forth in the original decree.
Your Honor, I'm not sure that they did. But, and again, it one could have the HOA as the foreclosing party contact the sheriff and tell him to cancel it, bump it, withdraw it. One could, recognizing the lack of the problems in the record, exercise your right as a junior lienor and pay the remaining $2,000 to protect your $232,000 lien. One could file a document under the existing case there to have an order issued to the sheriff to rescind the sale. One could file a separate lawsuit. One could seek an injunction. One could do any number of things, none of which were done here, that would have adequately put Greenpoint in a position where their lien was protected. And I see my time has expired.
Thank you, counsel, and I also commend you. This is a rule that is not always observed, that the litigant or the attorneys actually recognize this rule and actually say, okay, my time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you.
Case will stand submitted. Opinion will issue in due course. Thank you both for your arguments.